This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Welcome back to The Lines Between Us, our year-long exploration of inequality in the Baltimore region. Today we look at the internship. The internship is widely perceived as a necessary, if not sufficient, prerequisite to getting a good-paying white-collar job. The New York Times reported that in 1992, 17% of graduating college students had taken an internship. The National Association of Colleges and Employers says that in 2012, 55% of graduating seniors had taken an internship or a similar program called Cooperative Education Assignment. Why is this an issue for the lines between us? What line of equity is being raised? One is this: if you're going to work for free, you need to get your money from somewhere. For students from low-income backgrounds, that often means choosing between part-time work outside your field or accruing debt to take an internship in the field. Last week, our senior producer Lawrence Lanahan talked with someone who recently faced that decision.
My name is Alexis Webb. I'm an alumni of Morgan State University, and I graduated in May 2012. I live in Baltimore, Maryland, northeast side, near Morgan State. So they had always spoken to me, a lot of my teachers, about getting an internship, but I really didn't realize that I needed one until I actually took my internship class in my last semester of my senior year. But it was a requirement to graduate that we had to take an internship class. But because I had been working my whole college career, I really didn't think it was a priority until somebody was like, "Hey, Alexis, you don't get jobs unless you do an internship." And I was like, "Oh, okay." So I decided to go ahead and get an internship right upstairs at WEAA, that's Morgan State University's radio station. And I ended up getting an internship afterwards at the Afro, which is the African-American newspaper. I had a lot of loans when I was in school. I still have loans, but I didn't really have anybody to... Like, my parents gave me money, but I didn't have, you know, like, steady income. So I had to go out and find a job in order to have some money coming in as I was in school. I had to work. I mean, it was just what I had to do. There's one particular girl. She actually has a job in her field right now. And I think it's due to the fact that she probably had about four or five internships while she was in school. So she had somebody to support her while she was in her college career, but I didn't. So I had to work, and I didn't have time dedicated to set aside to do internships like that. It's very beneficial if you already have somebody that can take care of you, and then you have time to go out and do these internships. It's just helping those that already have help, that already have the financial support to go out and do things for free, where people who don't have to work and we have to have, like, part-time jobs while we're in school. I mean, I know one particular girl, she had about four or five internships, and it's really paid off for her, but a lot of my other friends, they just worked part-time, just like I did, and hoped that when we got out, we could find a job. I mean, especially as an HBCU student and as an African-American woman, I mean, we always see a socioeconomic divide anyway, but when it's not stressed in your curriculum, like, if it was stressed in my curriculum as a freshman, like, you know, maybe I would have taken an internship class as a freshman, then I would have already been prepared, and that way I would probably might have had a job right now, you know, in my field. Luckily, I've come across some freelance work, but I might have, you know, been fortunate enough to have a job because I would have gotten those three or four internships. But yeah, I think it's definitely important. It should be something that's introduced early on to college students, not something that's just a graduating requirement.
Alexis Webb of Northeast Baltimore. On 88.1, I'm Sheila Cast. This is The Lines Between Us on Maryland Morning.
I'm assistant producer Jamila Kay.
You're listening to Maryland Mornings, the Lines Between Us series on WYPR 88.1 in Baltimore. Visit our website, linesbetweenus.org, to hear more stories, to see maps that reveal the lines in your neighborhood, and to participate in the discussion. Thanks for downloading this week's show. Now back to the podcast.
In his book, Internation, How to Earn Nothing and Learn Little in the Brave New Economy, author Ross Perlin writes, quote, internships are an increasingly potent factor in the disturbing trend of widening social inequality in America, unquote. And Ross Perlin joins us from Brooklyn, New York. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Sheila.
And also with me here in the studio is Alyssa Richardson, who teaches journalism at Bowie State University. Every semester, she's trying to help her students get internships. Welcome back, Alyssa.
Thanks for having me, Sheila.
Now, Alyssa, we just heard from Morgan State alumna Alexis Webb. You used to teach at Morgan State. How typical is her story?
Her story is very typical. As she described, a number of students cannot participate in unpaid internships during the academic school year because they have to work part-time in addition to receiving financial aid. The question then comes, well, what about the summertime? There is a requirement by the federal government that in order to be considered for financial aid throughout any semester, a student must carry at least 9 credit hours. Most summer sessions only allow students to take a maximum of 6 credit hours. So then we come back to the issue of them needing to work to put themselves through school to pay for that class that would afford them the college credit in the internship scheme or model that we have set up right now. So summer becomes not an option for these students either.
So they're just sort of left out of this picture. Ross Perlin, how important do you think the internship has become for getting a good job?
I think in many professions, particularly white-collar professions, internships have become a virtual gateway into the world of work. The white-collar world, as we keep hearing, is increasingly where high-paying and prestigious and influential jobs are concentrated. And in many of these fields, internships have been set up, and in particular unpaid internships or very low-paid internships, as something you simply have to do, a kind of hoop that you have to jump through. It's often not enough now to have a bachelor's degree, even from a four-year school, to do a graduate degree, but you also have to have this kind of record of internships as well.
And how do you see that trend playing out across the nation in terms of mobility and inequality?
Well, internships, you know, we're talking specifically here, focusing on unpaid internships and very low-paid internships where there may just be a stipend where you're not earning at least, you know, minimum wage or something that you can try to live off. These internships are often concentrated in expensive cities. Washington, D.C. or New York or Los Angeles is where many, many kind of key internships are. These are places where the rent is high. You're not just working for free. You are, in a sense, paying to work. You have to be able to afford the rent while you're doing this. You're passing up other opportunities where you have to earn money. And, you know, many, many students like Alexis have to, they have to work their way through college. That's overwhelmingly true for community college students. And it's true for, you know, many students at four-year schools. So you are, in a sense, paying. You may be paying for academic credits as well at the same time, which are required by the employer. So you're often paying your school to go work, you know, off campus unpaid. And so in this kind of pay-to-play system, you're talking about something that some people will not be able to afford to do, especially, you know, be able to do multiple times. And so ultimately, there's a kind of winnowing process where, you know, who can sort of who can jump through all those hoops? Who can make it through that? It's going to be somebody who has a support network behind them, who has, you know, they may not be rich by any means, but they're going to have a certain kind of support network and family members in order to do that.
Alyssa, we've been talking about this as a class issue. You've been teaching at historically black colleges and universities for a couple of years. What's the race dimension of this?
I think the race dimension is directly connected to the class issue. As Alexis mentioned, there are divides even within the HBCU culture. Many of my students who might have been low income were excluded from the internship process, but there were a number of affluent students who did benefit and who are at very successful jobs right now. One of the things I try to stress to my students who are unable to participate in internships historically was to seek internships within the region where they live. One of the things that we do at Bowie State, for instance, is if we know a student is from New York, we will try to pair that student with an unpaid internship in the region where they work. As Ross mentioned, a lot of these internships are concentrated in areas where the rent is high. So if we can have students who intern at home, it has become easier for us to place students.
This is Marilyn Morning, The Lines Between Us on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast, talking about internships with Alyssa Richardson, communications professor at Bowie State University, and Ross Perlin, author of Intern Nation. Alyssa, do you see it working differently for your male students versus your female students?
Absolutely.
Do they do differently on internships?
Absolutely, and I'm glad you brought up the dimension of gender. A lot of my male students really see themselves as being sports anchors or participating in male-dominated journalism areas. So a lot of them, when they think of internships, think of ESPN only. And I tell them that they need to broaden their idea of where they would like to work for a first opportunity, a foot in the door. My female students, on the other hand, are more willing to travel to different areas where no one may have heard of those anchors or editors, and they are more willing to cover topics that don't traditionally seem gender specific. For instance, I have students who are covering environmental issues or students who are covering mechanics during internships, and they're women. Whereas if a man was asked to cover a fashion or an entertainment story, just because interns are sometimes thrown the scraps, so to speak, a lot of the male students call me up and they have a problem with that. They see that they don't see it as directly relating to what they'd like to do in the field, and so they're a little bit resistant.
It's interesting, though, because this gets us to the question of, I mean, you're saying these students don't see that particular assignment as what they're after. At what point is it a menial assignment? At what point is it not really something where an intern is learning? Ross, you've written about that problem of internships just being used for the most menial jobs.
You know, for obvious reasons, many interns' sort of, you know, primary concern with their internship, maybe even above whether they're getting paid or not, is what kind of work they're doing, what kind of experience they're having, whether they feel valued. And a lot of internships obviously get a bad rap because they involve menial work. And, you know, in the research for Intern Nation, I came across all kinds of stories, like you would expect. You know, the intern who had to, you know, walk his boss's dog all the time, the intern who had to take her boss's urine sample to the doctor, you know, doing personal errands for people, things that you're really not kind of learning.
Ross, what proportion of internships are unpaid?
As best we know, and the statistics in this area are not as good as they should be, it's something between a third and half of all internships are unpaid.
And what are the rules for an unpaid internship?
The rules are not as complicated as you might think. For internships at for-profit companies, the rules fit on a single page. There is basically a 6-point test, which is administered by the Department of Labor, either at the federal level or it can be at the state level as well. Basically, the situation is that unless companies can meet all 6 of these points, which you can easily find on the internet or elsewhere, then the intern has to be paid at least minimum wage. The intern is effectively an employee. And in terms of the content of those 6 points, what they really emphasize is that this is a training experience for the benefit of the intern.
One of those points for one of those Department of Labor criteria for an unpaid internship says that the employer should provide training and derive no immediate advantage from it. So the government seems to be setting up a standard where the employers get nothing out of this. Is that realistic?
I don't think it's really getting nothing. But, you know, I think the traditional model for internships has been not about immediate advantage, but about long-term advantage that employers are deriving from training young people, from investing in young people. So, you know, many of the sort of the best companies and the best organizations in America still do this. The idea is, you know, to use internships as a talent pipeline, as a recruiting tool, to bring young people in, to invest in them, to kind of, you know, almost win them over a little bit while they're at that impressionable stage, like just, you know, still in college or just out of college. I think the problem now comes with employers taking a very short view of this. And, you know, in periods where they're really busy, or if they simply, you know, they have a hiring freeze on, or for whatever the other reasons, they're trying to save on labor costs. They simply want to kind of bring in interns and, you know, and not do much training.
Let me ask, what feedback do you get from your students about whether the internship is worth it?
My students who are successful in landing unpaid internships have generally searched for a long time, so many of them are having positive experiences. One most recent intern that I helped mold was a student who went on to work for VH1. She looked for internships for about 2 years from her freshman year on, and she knew it was unpaid. She lived in the tri-states area, so she had a place to live, and she actually did know the things that she wanted to learn. She knew that she wanted to at least conduct an interview with one celebrity. That was her thing. She wanted to learn how to blog. She wanted to post video to websites, and she wanted to network. And once we sat down and outlined her goals, I was able to make a call over to the department and ask if these were opportunities that were reasonable for interns to experience within that network. They told me yes, and we actually drafted a small memorandum of understanding where her supervisor would be able to report to me on a biweekly basis whether those goals were being met.
Ross, you've spoken eloquently about the unfairness of employers using interns just to get work done and not actually imparting skills. But you've also said that interns can displace workers. As a practical matter, in the depths of the recession, it was a choice of the employers either were going to put an unpaid intern in their office or nothing. It wasn't like they were going to pay somebody. So is it better to get some experience, even unpaid, than not to get your foot in the door at all?
I think the recession of the last 5 years or so has definitely exacerbated matters. We've seen paid internships go unpaid. We've seen employees be replaced by interns. You know, there are certainly situations exactly like what Alyssa just described that, you know, our model unpaid internships where, you know, where the training and the learning is happening and, you know, often and there's an educational component. There's somebody, at a college or university who's really looking out for their students and structuring things. But increasingly, I mean, internships are in many cases kind of out of the purview of the academic world. On the one hand, there's who can afford to pay to play, who can enter this system. But then there's another kind of inequality issue, which we haven't really touched on, which is the composition then of these professions. If you look at fields like media and politics and film, entertainment, television, some of the fields that are, you know, most notorious for good reason for using unpaid interns and making that kind of a requirement to break in. These are not fields which are, you know, which are diverse, racially or socioeconomically or otherwise. They're fields which say they're trying to do this, but at the same time, you know, internships are a contributing factor to the problem. They're restricting the range of voices that we hear as a society from these influential professions. So I think, you know, that there's another kind of dimension to the inequality that internships give rise to.
I'm grateful to you both for talking to us about this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sheila.
Ross Perlin is author of Intern Nation, How to Earn Nothing and Learn Little in the Brave New Economy. Alyssa Richardson is a communications professor at Bowie State University. The Lines Between Us is a year-long multimedia examination of inequality in our region. We're almost halfway through. You can hear previous episodes, look at data maps, hear listeners' personal stories about inequality at our website, linesbetweenus.org. We should note that as part of his training, one of our two part-time unpaid interns, Brandon Green, helped edit the audio for this segment. On 88.1, I'm Sheila Cass. That's it today for The Lines Between Us. Later on Maryland Morning, The Month in Movies. Stick around.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Lines Between Us, WYPR's year-long exploration of inequality in the Baltimore region. This is Maryland Morning senior producer, Lawrence Lanahan. Now, join the conversation at facebook.com/thelinesbetweenus. Or tell us your story at linesbetweenus.org. The Lines Between Us is made possible by grants from Associated Black Charities, Cohen Opportunity Fund, Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation, Baltimore Community Foundation, and Open Society Institute Baltimore, as well as support from members of the WYPR Board of Directors. I hope you'll join us again on Friday at 9 a.m. on 88.1 FM in the Baltimore region, and everywhere else, streaming live at WYPR.org. Have a great day.